Collectors, let's talk about the real villain in your collection. It's not Dr. Doom, it's the dreaded box stack. You know the one, piles of sagging boxes, and the issue you need is always in the bottom box. When you lift, you pray your spine survives. If your comic boxes are stacked like a game of Jenga, it's time for Drawer Boxes, the easy access storage solution from CollectionDrawer.com. Drawer Boxes are stackable up to 6 high, but you don't have to unstack anything to get inside. Just slide out the drawer and you're opening a treasure chest of comic glory. And just like any file cabinet drawer, they'll hang open on the own while you peruse your collection, thanks to their patented box locks box anchors that secure each unit so that they won't tip. Worried about a drawer slipping out and dumping that near mint run of Ultimate Spider-Man on the floor? Not a chance, but their patented locking tabs that keep drawers securely locked into their shell until you're ready to remove them. Let's talk box sort upright dividers. They keep your comics standing tall, sorted by title, issue, era, whatever you like, and make it easy to file. No more leaning stacks causing spine cracks. So ditch the lifting, ditch the chaos. Drawer boxes turn your collection into a library, not a workout. Visit CollectionDrawer.com and start enjoying your collection today. Doesn't your first Deadpool appearance deserve better than being buried in a cardboard coffin?
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple places on the internet. We are live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Instagram, LinkedIn, of course. Not Kick, though. We got kicked from Kick just now. I just got a message. So to our spam bots who have been faithfully following us on Kick and
they'll find
offering
us
amazing, amazing deals every week. I'm sorry. Next week, we'll catch up with you.
Catch up with Kick. But one of those that we name is not real, as always. So it's up to you to guess which one.
One of them is not real social media, but we have an exciting show for you tonight, folks. Yeah. Very excited about the guest that we have on the show. Big fan of his work. He is the creator behind, among many, many other things, Lumberjanes, Nimona, She-Ra, and the Princess of Power. And his first prose novel, though it is still illustrated, Scarlet Morning, which is coming
real
out September 23rd from Quill Tree Books. Ladies and gentlemen, N.D. Stevenson, hello, welcome.
Hey, welcome.
Hello.
Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh.
As I already said, very excited to have you here. Big fan of your work and everything you're doing. But I want to set a little groundwork for this book, and I'm sure you've talked about this ad nauseum, but it is a pretty fascinating story because you've done, as we listed, a lot of things. I didn't list your entire resume here, but you've done a lot more things. But this book is one of the first things you did that you started writing in different fashions, correct me if I got the ages wrong, from like 12 to 15, right?
Yeah. It was... Wow. A childhood work of passion. So it started out as this basically playground game that I was playing with my friends, with my siblings. I was homeschooled, so I had a lot of time on my hands. And we weren't allowed to like watch TV or play Pokemon or do any of the fun things that our public school friends got to do. And so it was sort of like an easy crowd for me where I was like, all right, we're all pirates. We're all doing this. Let's go. Here's everyone's part. Here's your motivation. Here's what you're feeling in your heart. Like, I basically invented the idea of being a DM, not even knowing that was a thing for years later. It was something that I was really, really, just really, really into as a kid. And I started channeling that into this epic 600-page novel that I was really dead set on finishing by the time I turned 15. And I did it. And then I was like, great, what do I do now? And then I could not find an answer for that. And then it sat in my drawer for like 15 more years.
Wait, when you were 15, it was 600 pages?
Oh, yeah.
What?
And I had a lot of
That's a lot of pages.
Wow.
And let me ask you, like, were you... did you play the game and then adopt, like, move stuff over into the novel? Did you, like, stop playing the game and turn it all into the novel? Because, like, that's sort of a great process, I feel like. Workshop.
I think the novel started coming around by the time maybe my friends were getting a little old for playing games like that. And so I moved it to, I set this goal for myself. I think I read Aragon and I was like, this guy is a kid and he's homeschooled. If he can do it, so can I. So that was a lot of like why I was doing this to begin with. But yeah, I think my friends had kind of moved on from playground games, but I was still like, every time I finished a chapter, I would send it to my friends. I was just like looking over those emails yesterday and I'm like, were they actually into this? Or did I just like refuse to stop pages of this book I was working on?
My God.
But yeah, one thing kind of like flowed into the other.
Wow. I do wonder, not to get too deep into it, but when I heard that you were inspired, at least in part, by Aragon, that's a pretty long book, too. Do you think there's a part of it that you were like, well, this is how long books need to be? They need to be hundreds and hundreds of pages long?
Yeah, you know what? I don't even know. I think I was... I think I did want it to be very epic because it had always felt really epic. You know, I don't even remember what the plot of the original game was, but I remember being like moved to tears, like being like, oh my God, you're dying in my arms, and betrayal and divorce and all of these big things that I had no idea in real life anything about. But it always felt like a very big, very epic. Yeah, 600 pages. And then when I got back to it years and years later, I was like, I'll cut this down, no problem. And I managed to get it down to 500 pages. So that's the reason why the book is now in two parts, because I really did feel at the end, I was like, I don't think I can get it down any more than this without like losing part of what makes this book what it is.
I mean, you just addressed this a little bit, but you picked it up again in 2020, beginning of the pandemic, if I read that correctly. And you're a very different creator now than you were when you were 15. You're more experienced. You've been in more media. You've done more crafting of story world. So what was your initial impression when you read that draft again?
Every word perfect.
Man, great, really good.
I was, great. I've been great for years.
Yeah, you just hit send to your publisher and you're good to go.
No, unfortunately, reading the original draft was pretty rough at times, but it was an interesting time. So I just finished my work on She-Ra, which had been 5 years of just, I am naturally a more introverted person, a little more shy. Then I got the job of being a showrunner, and that means I was talking to somebody basically 20 hours a day.
Yeah, so much extroversion there.
And then in my dreams, continuing to do that. So it was, for all intents and purposes, just became a different person for 5 years. So that job ended, and at the exact same time, the pandemic started. So I went from seeing people all day, every day, to seeing nobody and seeing my walls and being really sad. And so it was the first time in my life that I hadn't had like a job. I like Sims nonstop for a week, and then I was like, I got to stop doing that. Things are getting weird. finally, I had this file on my computer that I hadn't opened in years. I'd always been afraid to reread it because I was really afraid it would be bad. And I had so many fond memories of, you know, this childhood days. And so finally I was like, all right, we're doing this. I'm locking in. I'm grabbing a beer. We're doing this. And it was a long way from perfect. Like I said, a lot of it was really rough. I really thought that I was Douglas Adams and the
nice reference.
All the best things that you definitely want a 15-year-old to be trying to do. But then at the same time, I was like, wait, I still kind of love this. Like these characters still speak to me. This world is still interesting. And there were a lot of like hanging threads. There was this huge overarching mystery, and I had left absolutely no clues about like what the answer to that mystery was. And so it was sort of like pulling me back in by being like, wait, what? That's it? That like I didn't write an outline. I didn't like write the ending of this. Like, where was I going? So it sort of it required a lot of like almost like archaeology to start piecing things back together. It was in scattered among like hundreds of documents. It was not in any kind of like coherent shape. And so like I started digging back into it, and then again, because I was I was stuck inside, and I really wanted to see something spectacular. I wanted to like see something besides like, you know, the four walls around me. And so I was like, let me just try and do a little bit of free writing and see what this is. Mm-hmm. How do I write now? And so I started writing these, some scenes that made it into the final book of just like, you know, these spectacular scenes that I wish that I could be there to see. And this kind of, you know, magnificent journey through these, the sea that has been transformed into this desert of salt, and it's very dead and it's very austere in a lot of ways. And then it's also very beautiful. And so
sorry, we should say before you give any more details, can you tell us sort of the overarching, we haven't heard the full like sort of story idea.
Yeah,
for anybody that doesn't know.
So it starts, there are these two orphans. They are growing up on this island where, you know, nothing ever happens. It is completely snowed over with what you might think is snow, but it's actually salt. This whole world, after this huge storm, the whole world has been turned into a desert of salt, and the ocean has been kind of crusted over, and now travel is very, very difficult. So they're alone on this island waiting for someone to come to them, but it just kind of seems like no one's coming, or even that no one can come. They don't even know if anyone is left out there alive at all. And so finally someone does come, even though it's this kind of sketchy person, Captain Cadence Chase and her ragtag crew. And at first they're like, are these guys pirates? Like, probably not, right? Like, that would be weird, but they certainly seem like they might be pirates. And so the two of them get caught up in this swashbuckling adventure and this, you know, years old mystery that was sort of perpetrated by a lot of the adults that they come to meet. And so now it's up to them to kind of piece together what's going on, who's good, who's bad, whose fault is it that all of this happened, and figure out, where their loyalties lie and how to save this world that's constantly and like rapidly getting eaten up by salt, kind of burying all these secrets with it.
Wow. I mean, this brings up a question that I wanted to ask you just about world building, because you started to talk about your process a little bit, or at least how you break things down. And it sounds like you're a little freer with this because you were already had those 600 pages of bones to deal with. But versus something like, say, Shira or Nimona, which do have these very deep thought out worlds behind them, where do you start with that? Like, where did you start with something like this? Was it taking a look at what you had in that draft and then just like picking and choosing? Was it literally like creating a Bible for Scarlet Boarding, or how did you tackle it?
I'm a big believer in, I guess, in like strange mashups or just kind of like, so like with Nimona, for example, I was really interested in almost like superhero style storytelling, but I didn't want to just do like a generic, like a knockoff Marvel or DC world. And so I was like, you know what, superheroes are really similar to knights, like, you know, this kind of medieval, like knightly valor, like there's a lot in common there. So I'm just going to basically smash those two things together. And back in the day, there wasn't a ton of world building that I did other than that. It all kind of was discovered on the page. And what I love about comics so much is that so much of the world building is something that's implied in your reader's mind, what kind of takes place in between each panel, or what might be right out of frame. So Scarlet Morning, it was really the first time that I actually had the time to sit down and start world building and doing research and kind of delving deeper and really taking the time to kind of chart out the limits of this world. So the draft that I wrote as a kid, it didn't have this desert of salt element. That was something that I introduced as an adult because I had gotten really into, you know, like reading about like lost Arctic expeditions or like people who die while trying to climb Mount Everest. There was something about like the hostility and the beauty of like snow and ice and these places that people are always trying to go to and constantly dying in the process. I was just really compelled by that. So I was like, I had this image of these two kids like barefoot in short sleeves, like basically navigating this Arctic landscape. And I thought that was really interesting. And it sounded like something I wanted to draw as well. So that was kind of the launching place. And then I also, you know, the name Scarlet Morning, it's based on this sailor saying about, you know, the red sky in the morning, sailor's warning. And also at the time, this was still in 2020 and we're having terrible fires, and the sky was always like gray and the sun was always red. And like, it was just really eerie. And so that was something, you know, I was sort of looking out my window at this world that I couldn't fully be a part of, and trying to kind of translate that into something, that, you know, I wanted to explore in a deeper way. And so that's really where this idea of the salt and the kind of this almost apocalyptic and yet still very beautiful landscape, like that's where that started.
Wow. It's so visual. That's why, like, it's the visual is there in the words. So then you made the choice to add the illustrations. Were you doing that sort of parallel path as you were writing? Or like you said, you were like, I want to draw this too. It sort of came in bits and pieces as you went.
Yeah. And a lot of the art that you're showing up here on the screen is actually concept art. So I was really drawing and writing at the same time, because that's what I know. And for me, the quickest way to find a character is to draw them. So it was, you know, at first it was really slow going when it came to the prose. I was so out of practice and just kind of like, oh my God, can I even do this? Like, I mean, the last time I tried this, I was 15 and just kind of stupid. Like, you know, I didn't know better than to, I was like, obviously I can do this. I've read books. I can write books. And I do kind of think it's that simple, but, you know, as an adult, I ended up with more, I was like, oh my God, I'm such a poser. I'm too stupid to do this. Why would I think I could write a book? And so the art really became a way of kind of like my comfort blanket a little bit. Like I could kind of figure out who these characters were, what their relationships with each other were. And I could feel out this world in a little bit. I've never been the strongest at drawing landscapes. So that was like a challenge that I set for myself. But then it was also something, you know, it's a world that's very, it's almost all white. And so trying to use the white of the page for that as well, to kind of imply a world that is bigger than just what I'm drawing. But yeah, it was a challenge. It was really like setting that challenge for myself and just like trying to truck on through it.
Going off what you said, like you had said you've written this in sort of secret on your own. When you were working on it as an adult, when did it go from being like a secret and still like a little bit of secret to like, all right, this is going out into the world?
It was a secret for a while. I was tinkering and I was like revisiting the characters and I was trying to piece together this mystery that I don't even know if like I got it right. I might've just like had to like completely reconstruct it. But eventually my agent found out about it. I made a comic about it and kind of what my relationship was with writing as a kid and the way that I was like really, it was this very kind of guileless, like just love of writing that I've never been able to recapture ever since. Like I always kind of feel like I have like an executive or a critical professor or someone in my head, like those, whatever criticism I got, like that always kind of stuck with me, especially when it came to prose itself. I ended up finding more of a voice in on the visual side. And so now it was like trying to confront those again and being like, well, you know, can I do this? What's my voice as an adult? You know, yeah. How do I turn this into something that maybe I could still feel that way about as an adult? And so I made that comic and my agent saw it and reached out and was like, hey, send it to me. And I was like, okay, but you can never show it to anybody. I hope you never will. But you know,
there's one person you can trust. It's an agent and not telling a secret to about something awesome.
Charlie. Oh my God. But yeah, like that was, I think the moment, like kind of just the act of sharing it made it into something real that wasn't just this kind of like childhood memory or this, you know, found object, but something that was still living, something that I could revisit.
That's cool. So cool. I just want to start by saying, like, really appreciate your work. Thank you for some really amazing writing. I want to kind of talk a little bit about the parallels of like a huge story like this, but also being like a showrunner on something that is longer, like a She-Ra, that is a little bit more epic and adventure. I'm assuming one, you get all these great ideas from other people, and then this, you know, it's just kind of your brain. Can you talk a little about how much fun it is working with others, sharing an idea or maybe challenging versus just kind of working by yourself, kind of going through this and being kind of stuck in your own brain?
Yeah, I mean, it's something I think I love them both so much. Like, you know, I when I got into comics and I really loved the fact that I could do everything myself, you know, like I could basically just start drawing and then throw it up on the internet. And like, you know, one of the things I think is cool about Nimona is that you can see me getting my feet under myself as a webcomic artist, like sort of honing in on the characters, on the style, on my drawing skill. And then, you know, I had no plans to get into animation. That was kind of an accident. But as soon as I was working my first job, the reason I was like leading those games for my friends when I was a kid was because I loved being in a magical fantasy world with other people. And then I was working in animation. And I was like, oh my God, we're all in the same magical fantasy world.
I'm playing the game with you guys now.
Yeah. And I was so annoying. I was running around like peeking into everyone's cubicles. Like, what are you working on? Can I see? Can I watch? Can I hear the movie? Like, what's going on? Can I meet the actors? Can I do this? And they really humored me and let me kind of stick my nose into a lot of places that as a brand new writer, they probably didn't belong. But I loved it. I loved it. It was magical. And so that's something I really, really love about animation. But then at the same time, after 5 years, it was an enormous, it's one of the most challenging things I've ever done, and also one of the most rewarding. And so much of that was from the relationships, from this collaboration. At the same time, at the end of it, I felt like I had sort of been spending this whole time, a showrunner, at the beginning, I thought you're the ideas person, and maybe right. Sort of you are, but more than that, you are a manager. It's actually like, it's a lot more right. technical than I expected. And I had to gain all of these leadership skills that I had never had any reason to use before. And so at the end, I was like, I've been spending so much time learning to support my crew that I don't know if I know what my own personal voice is anymore.
Oh,
I've
wow.
kind of lost that along the way. And so by going back into this on my own, it became something that was kind of healing of being like, all right, like, who am I? What do I like? What, you know, I think the fact that it was something I'd loved so much as a teenager, it was sort of like, it gave me sort of a North Star, I guess, like something to kind of guide me through the quagmire of burnout, of, you know, this wild twist that the world had just taken. And just, yeah. you know, the feeling at the end of this just like epic job. And so it's like, okay, I know I used to love this. So I think I can kind of follow that and start like coaxing some of that love back out of my heart that is just kind of like so fucking tired.
Yeah.
Lying on the ground, like, oh, great.
What a great path back in to sort of show run your 15-year-old self. And yeah. then take over from them.
Yeah.
And write
yeah,
the book.
My 15-year-old self is kind of a bitch to work with.
Yeah.
Huge diva.
Yeah.
Well, wait, I am curious. I mean, this is jumping ahead a little bit, but how do you feel now that you're on the cusp of this book coming out? Does it feel like it has reinvigorated that creativity, or do you need to write more books and dig up more manuscripts?
It definitely revived that, like, you know, I sort of just let myself become okay with becoming insane. but it was, you know, I think with both Nimona and Mashira, we were on a schedule, like a pretty tight one. So it's like, go, go, go. You only have so long that you can just sit, like, tinkering with things before, like with Mashira, we barely even had a development phase. We were doing development and production at the same time. So oh, it wow. was like, all right, that's the character design. There's no time to change it. So like, let's ship it. Which
you draw
be,
it live, right? You draw
That's the way animation works, I hear.
Yeah. You're just falling off a cliff and you have no parachute. And you're just like, ah! And I think that led to the show being what it is and special and frustrating in its own way. But with this, I had the time to tinker. And so I was like, it became obvious very quickly. I was not the teenager anymore that I was when I wrote the book. And I also wasn't the writer that I wanted to be yet. So I was kind of stuck in the middle. And so in order to get better at writing, it was going to take more than just mushing words around on a page. And so I decided that I really needed to do research. I needed to read. I needed to kind of like fall down internet rabbit holes and like figure out just like what I was into and what this world was. And I just kind of let myself like play, I guess. And like just try and like refill those wells of inspiration and build my skill as a writer and find my voice now. And all of that took kind of like, you know, there were days or weeks where I didn't put anything on the page or nothing that I stuck with. And I was just like, I have been downloading digitized rare books and like scouring through them for like information I can get anywhere else. And I'm like, somehow this is important to the story. Wow. and it kind of was, you know, even if it wasn't one-to-one, all of these things, it ended up coming together to build what this world was and to create the feeling of it. But now here at the, we're a week out of it being published, and yeah. I'm realizing that the other part of doing something on your own is that now I don't have any coworkers to share the anxiety.
To party with.
Yeah, I know.
The rap party's a little smaller than.
It's just me kind of like lying awake in bed all night, like, oh my God, it's so bad. I really wish I could be drinking about this with someone who is listening on this with me. But it's had its upsides and its downsides. I'm doing great. I'm holding it together super well.
We can tell. Well, we do have a couple of questions in the comments I want to get to in a second, but I did want to ask you just like generally about your work. Actually, very specifically first about this book, you've got these two great, very wholesome central kids, Wilmer and Viola, who are the main characters. They're going on a big adventure journey, like you talked about. But from reading the book, it feels like it really snaps into place once Chase, this mysterious, maybe villainous character, shows up. And it occurred to me as soon as Chase showed up that I feel like a lot of your work is characterized by getting inside the bad guy's head in particular. Like, that's kind of what Nimona was all about, at least the graphic novel. They changed it a little bit, or you changed it a little bit in the movie. And same sort of thing with She-Ra, where a lot of the story was about Adora and Catra coming together and finding sort of like a common ground and understanding. So what is it about that in particular that fascinates you, unless I'm reading way too much into your entire?
No, you're not. And honestly, I think
how dare you?
The answer is just religious trauma. I grew up very, very, very religious and homeschooled and everything. So I think I knew from a very young age that I was different from the kids around me, and that brought me a lot of anxiety as a kid. Even reading the Bible, I had this like comic book version of the Bible, and I got really into Jezebel because she looked really cool. She had like purple eyeliner and like a cool hat, and I was just like, who is she? So I was like the kid who was like, I like Jezebel. And they're like, this is the Bible. You can't choose Jezebel as your favorite character. But I was always kind of drawn towards, you know, the people who, you know, they represented the dark side of this dichotomy that I was raised with. And I think that that was the reason I love pirates. And I've loved them for almost as long as I can remember, because they were people who were sort of shunted to the verges of society. They occupied, in order to find freedom, they escaped to these no man's lands where they could be themselves. And also they were, you know, really filthy and murderous and scary at the same time. But it was also, you know, the romantic idea of them is, you know, it's freedom. And I think that's what drew them to me. And that's why, you know, this was the game I always wanted to play. And Captain Cadence Chase was, the main, I think for me at that age, one of the main reasons that I was so compelled by it, because I can't say for sure where this character kind of emerged from. There's a little Jack Sparrow in there. There's a little, you know, I always knew from a really young age that I was into like female pirates. And I don't really know if I was reading anything like that or if it was just kind of obvious to me, because I was mostly playing this game with like my friends who are girls. But I just was really compelled by this character, and I found her really exciting and mysterious, and kind of wanted to know all about her. She represented the world of grown-ups, and I was really interested in her. And I think the story kind of came together around her, of just like wanting to understand more and kind of like, you know, I was in the place of the kids, like, who are also like, can we trust her? Is she good? Is she bad? But they also, they're compelled by her and they want to know more about her. But she's definitely, I think, one of my oldest characters.
We got a couple of questions here. As I mentioned, this one is from, it came for the radio when you decided to split the book into two parts, since it wasn't originally designed to two parts. How did you decide where to end the first part?
You know, at first I really did want to fit it into one book, and it just, you know, I realized that there was so much, and that this world, I wanted it to feel big. And I didn't feel like it would feel big if I kept cutting it down. And so once I decided that there was a kind of symmetry to this book that was already there that felt natural, you know, this, the phrase that I quoted before, the like red sky in the morning, sailor's warning, that's the best known version of that. But there was another more obscure version that I ended up adopting, and it's in the book as well. Evening gray, or evening red and morning gray, sends the traveler on his way. Morning gray and evening, no, sorry, you get it. Morning gray, yeah, and evening red brings down rain upon his head. And so it was, it had this duology to it, this, the symmetry of these two harbingers of disaster, of catastrophe. And so I decided that the two books would be, the first book was already named Morning Red, and so the second book had to be named Evening Gray. And they really mirror each other, the way that, like, you know, it, the symmetry of it became something that was really interesting to me in the book, and something I kind of ran with, of every character kind of has their counterpart. So it was something, and there's also like the setting of the second book is really different from the settings of the first book. The characters are put into an environment that we've never seen them in before. And so it felt like it was so different from the first book that in a weird way, it seemed like it was already there. And it has kind of like fallen into place. I think the place where it is cut in half was already this cliffhanger that happened about almost exactly halfway between the book, or in the middle of the book. So it just felt right.
That's great.
This one, I think you kind of answered, but Christopher Cancel says, when doing your project, did you become the whole team? And I know you talked about, like, sort of jokingly about it's just you out there, but there are other people you're bouncing off of, I assume.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, it's never just one person. Everything I've ever done, even when Nimona was a webcomic, you know, I had friends who were building me the site, friends who were helping me. Like, it was always something that involved a community. And with this one, you know, obviously I have my editor, I have my agent, I have my crew at HarperCollins who have been editing and copy editing and designing and doing all the work of turning this into a real book. Cool. And then there's also the people, you know, like they're in the acknowledgments, but they're not credited as creators, but they're hugely influential. And one of the, you know, chief people is my husband, who is always, you know, we both work from home. Which means that I can just go and into his office and lie down on the floor and go,
I need to
help. He's a genius. And so he's always the first person to read each new draft, and is kind of very, you know, the feedback that he gives is always so helpful. And the minute I get it, I'm like, oh my God, of course you're right. I'm such an idiot. there's been, you know, my editor is the same way, manages to be so both very patient and positive with me working on this book while also cutting right to the heart of the issue every single time. So, you know, I've had support the whole way. It's never just a one person game. It's not as large as some of the other teams that I worked with, especially on She-Ra, but it doesn't mean that it's not still a group effort.
Yeah. This one, I feel like there's a backstory that maybe I don't know about, but as showrunner of She-Ra, do you know exactly how many different versions of the opening intro of the show was made?
Oh my God, I don't think there's any way to even quantify that, because it's like, it was something that we saw so many iterations of it. It was kind of, you know, boarding it to begin with was there were, we had input from different members of the team. And I think that there were four or five different people who all contributed just to the boards. That's not including the animation, that's not including the retakes or the timing or any of the other stages of making animation. And then of course we redid the theme song for season 5, and And there's a bunch of different versions of that as well, because I wanted to do, I was like, I wanted to be like America's Next Top Model, and I want people to be disappearing from the intro as they get like eliminated or brainwashed by Horde Prime. So that was fun trying to keep all that straight, because we don't do them in order. But yeah, so there's like probably hundreds of different versions of it. Wow, but I don't think that there was ever just like, here's version one, here's version two. It's like, right, all of these adjustments getting made. You're always seeing a different version of it, like almost every week, maybe more often than that. Yeah, it's just, and then you're also doing it at the same time as you're doing every single other part of the show. So yeah, animation's fun. It's a time.
I wanted to ask you a little more about some of these projects. You've got, this is the 5-year anniversary of She-Ra. It's also the 10-year anniversary of Nimona. First of all, do you only do projects on the fives and tens?
It really seems like I do.
Okay. Great cadence.
Yeah.
Great cadence. I like it. You know, it feels like there's like a natural, maybe like internal clock there that's like, I think even if a project has been really positive and life-changing, there's a certain amount of healing that for me comes with every single project that I've done. I think the most traumatizing part for me every single time is just the putting it out there. I think even when you're getting a great response, there's a heartbreak that comes from it no longer being yours. You've given it to the world, and now the world is going to do whatever they want with it. That's the deal. That's kind of the contract with the devil that you signed. You know, being like, I always wanted to bring people into my imaginary worlds, and now I get to do that as my job. I'm so lucky, and I, you know, I wouldn't choose anything else. At the same time, every single time I put something out there and it becomes the property of the world, It hurts, and it takes some recovery time. So yeah. I think that that's like the recovery for She-Ra, just because it was almost 5 years of just near constant, just go, go, go. Like, we're doing this. There's a crisis every day, every hour even. And then, you know, it took a lot of just being horizontal and staring at the ceiling and being like, I will never create anything else again in my life. That was it. That was the end of my creativity. Wow. It took some training wheels, I think, to start getting some of that passion back and that excitement of a new thing. But yeah, even things that have been like, just, you know, nothing but positive, like I find that they still have that recovery time built in. And so I think that's some of the reason why there is this like cycle of 5 years in there. It's just, you know, the amount of time that I need to sort of like start regaining
back
that
up.
Yeah.
For Nimona, there was talk at one point of a potential sequel movie, or at least interest in doing a sequel movie. Is there still any talk about that at all?
There is. It's something that's been kept alive. It's also a deeply weird time in animation. Not a lot of stuff is getting made. Not a lot of stuff with queer characters is getting made right now, for sure. Yeah. It's a very strange environment. I, you know, like to think of it as a transitional time. That's, you know, kind of the positive spin on it of like, maybe this is leading to somewhere even better, but right now it's not fun. All that to say, it's out there. There is a pitch I am very excited about. And I think if it ever comes to fruition, and at this point, I've been doing this long enough to know that like, nothing's ever really dead forever. You know, something can be put on ice, something can be killed, dead as a doornail, which Nimona, the first one, was. And then it came back to life. Like, I don't think it ever has to be over if there's at least one person still fighting for it. So there is.
If there's one file on your hard drive, it's still there 15 years later.
There's more than that. It's, yeah. I think that the conversation is far from dead, and I hope that one day it can come to fruition.
If there, maybe this is too far ahead, but if there was a sequel movie, would there also be a sequel book? Because like we said earlier, there, actually, I'll say my son is rereading Nimona right now. And last night before bed, he was like, you know, it's interesting because the movie and the book are like two versions of the same story told by different people. Yeah. So would there be a sequel book as well? Or does that feel unnecessary because the movie kind of goes in its own direction?
Yeah, that I'm not sure about, because I think the movie, for me, there was a split, like a sort of like parallel universes thing. I have a very positive experience with both of them. I love the movie. I really love the changes that they made to the comic, and I feel like they coexist. For example, I think like the character of Ambrosius Goldenloin is for like it, he's two different people in the book versus the movie, but I love them both. In fact, the character of Goldenloin is one that I would want to see more fleshed out in the movie version. So when working on like, you know, what the movie sequel would look like, that was almost easier because it's not building on the canon of the book. Whereas with the book, you know, I'm really fond of the way that it ends. I think that Nimona as a character is a question. And so to end the book on a question just felt right to me. And I didn't want to answer that question unless it introduced more questions in a way that felt right. I definitely have thought about it. I've even like, I think I was deep in my feels when the movie was coming out, and I did a couple pages of really loose, like sketchy, like, you know, what it might be like to for them to meet again. So it's out there, it's simmering. I just like, I want it to be for the right reason and not just because you want to hang out with your friends again. I think that's how it always feels. But then like, I'm sure that you've had your heart broken by some piece of media that like, oh my God, after 20 years, I'm making another season. I can't wait to see my friends. And then at the end, you're like, I kind of wish I hadn't.
Like a high school reunion or something that you're.
Yeah. The part, the thing that's in your head is so much. Like kids who come up to me and they're like, why does the book just end? I want to know what happens to Nimona. I'm like, that's the point. You're wondering, and that's the point. It's happening in your head. That's what I set out to do. Yeah. So if there's, I think if there's a reason, I'm definitely not saying no. I also have the urge to hang out with my friends again. I just wanted to do the right reason.
Speaking of a hard time for animation, I did also want to ask you about the Lumberjanes special that was announced a long time ago. And I think last time we heard about it with HBO Max was 2023. Obviously, a lot of things, not just changing in animation, but also with HBO Max very specifically. Is that still alive in development somewhere? Or what update can you give about that?
It is not. That's the easy answer. It went through so many iterations. It's interesting. Something like Nimona was like, even though it seemed like really bad timing, like you can't get much worse timing than an entire studio shutting down and killing your movie. But like at the same time, it was also the right timing. It turned out for it getting made. Whereas like Lumberjanes felt like it was like, it was at, I think, no less than three studios at various times. And then there was always some kind of regime change or merger or something going on that just made it untenable. So the version of it, the most recent version of it, is no longer animated, but that also is sort of like on ice at the moment. Everything, not just animation, it's, everything's pretty up in the air over here. But again, I'm going to say, like, I don't think it's dead. I think it's a long way from dead. It's just kind of like, I think everybody is waiting to see what our new reality is going to be out here in the world of entertainment. So yeah, like, that's where we are. That's like kind of the hard truth. I hope it will. I'm definitely down to keep playing with different iterations of it. And I hope it will. You know, we've even talked about other things like, could this be like a stage musical? Could this be like an RPG? And I think the answer is yes to all of that.
Yeah.
So those conversations are happening. It's just there's nothing solid at this point. Mm.
I do want to ask you a comic-specific question about Lumberjanes, because when I was looking through, I think the last time that Boom put out a printing, and I might be 100% off about this, was 2020. And there's such a huge catalog of books that you have there. Again, this is like very wonky, but there's the new format of compact comics. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but like the slightly cheaper digestized, still full color. And it feels like the thing that would be absolutely perfect for Lumberjanes. that might be way above your pay grade, but is that anything that is a possibility? Like maybe a new printing?
Alex out here pitching as a publisher.
Yeah, I mean, I can't do it. I have a printer. I have a color printer right here if you want. That's
pretty good.
Okay, I'll be right over. I think it's actually the opposite because Boom is putting out a new printing that they kickstarted, but it's an even bigger compendium of every issue ever made. So it's something like 7 volumes, maybe more. They're beautiful. I haven't seen them in person yet. Hoping to see them soon. I think those are supposed to be coming out pretty soon. I mean, I think that it is so interesting. It's always been something that's like a bunch of different writers and artists have all contributed to it. It exists in a bunch of different forms. I think it's one of those things that can exist in almost any form. So it is interesting. It's always like to think of like what gets the book into the hands of a kid who knows nothing about any of this.
Right.
I would like to see more of the floppy, I think the original books were done in like 4 issues per soft cover book. Like I would love to see more of that.
This isn't exactly a question here, but I'm going to turn it into one from YouTube. Mark Tweedale says, my nieces watched all of She-Ra over the Christmas holidays, and the first thing they asked when they got to the final episode was, is there going to be more? I'm sure you get this all the time, but I'm getting the sense that you were a little burnt out by the end of She-Ra. But just generally speaking, is animation something you'd ever want to get back to, or do you feel like working on these more personal projects like Scarlet Morning for the foreseeable future?
It's so funny. It's been 5 years and I feel like I know how to say, is there going to be more She-Ra in so many different languages? Because it's like always like, and I'm like, aren't like the kids who are watching this are now in their teens. Like it's like 5 years is not a long time, but in the world of like, you know, I'll have someone come up with a full beard and they'll be like, oh yeah, I used to watch this when I was 6 years old. And I'm like, what the?
Hold on.
Which is just, I think, what you sign up for when you create media for kids. It's like 5 years for a kid is a huge amount of time. For me, I'm like, yeah, that was like the difference between now and lunchtime. What's going on? all that to say, I think that like there are no plans. The thing I want people to understand about animation is that by the time you are watching the final season, everyone has already gone their separate ways. It is really, really difficult to get everyone back together. And if you can't get the original team back together, it's basically a different thing. So I think it's very likely, it has happened, you know, in animation to see, you know, seasons coming years, decades after the final season, and a lot of the original people do return. I think that that would be probably the best situation for everybody. But a lot of times what you're seeing is a whole new crew, very few if any of the original leaders who kind of made the show what it is behind the scenes. So it might be a new season, but it might not feel like the seasons that you know and love. So that's, I guess, my like caveat of, if there is news of a new iteration of She-Ra, it will probably be very different. Not that it can't still be good or even capture what made the show what it is, but it's very unlikely. I think for me, I would definitely want to get as many of the original team back together to even consider doing it. Otherwise, it would be an entirely new thing. Maybe a spinoff, something like that. But at this point, that's not something that's really on the horizon. I would really want it to be set up in a way where, as many of the people whose names you don't even know, I think there would not have been a She-Ra without them. Like, they would have to be there for that to happen for me.
And I mean, like you said, that whole idea of like coming back later after something was finished, it may not be the same thing again. Maybe it'll be better. Yeah. Maybe it'll be more awesome. But to be frank, like you delivered a incredibly satisfying series finale at the end there. So to go back to that, it's like, well, we tied it up with a bow. Now let's open up that bow.
Yes. Yeah. See what we got.
I mean, the privilege of being able to plan out 5 seasons of a show, know we had 5 seasons from the start, and be able to make that in an era where we get like one or two seasons and then they are canceled on a cliffhanger. Like, I don't take that for granted. The fact that we knew exactly from the start what our endpoint would be.
That is amazing.
Me personally, I couldn't ask for more. I think that that's the best possible ending for it. I'm really glad we got to do it.
Yeah.
I did want to take a little swerve and ask you a very general question, but I think you've been pretty outspoken about this in the past. I mean, right now, I'm sure as you're aware, and as we've been kind of skirting around, it's a very regressive and oppressive and scary environment for a lot of people, particularly for artists. As somebody who has seen a lot of success in a lot of different fields related to this, what would your advice be to somebody who is just starting off, particularly any queer creators who are just starting off in this field, who want to get started right now when everything seems to be working against them?
I think my advice would be, it's something that I've had to kind of come to terms with myself. It's very easy to feel like we're being pushed backwards right now, that we were making progress. Maybe we were even almost there. And now it's just, we're losing all that progress, where we're falling farther and farther behind from where we should be. And personally, I don't think that that's the most constructive way to view it. I don't think that there is one path forward. And I think that that's something, in order just to survive, that is something that I really want people to start thinking about, where it's less like, that door was supposed to be open, it got slammed in my face. It's like, well, maybe that door is not the only way through. That door, I don't think, from where we are now, it's easy to look at the world and be like, this is wrong, it shouldn't have been like this. It's also, I think, factually, you can look at what's been simmering and be like, this has been a long time coming at the same time, and we have to deal with that. So I think that the way that queer representation and the way that queer creators getting their work out there by necessity is going to have to look is us getting creative, getting weird, pushing back, staying quick on our feet. If the door is closed, like, it might seem like we have to turn around and go back, but all that we have is what's in front of us. All we can do is keep moving forward. We're not backing away. That is just how it works. That's just how it works to start trying to find a way through and getting as many people in that way as you can. I think it's pretty discouraging a lot of the time. I think it's also something that is going to lead to something remarkable, something new, something that, like, I don't think that any of us will be able to even hazard a guess at what it's going to look like. It's going to be something totally different. And I think, personally, I'm trying to open my heart to that, knowing that it might be something that is very unfamiliar and that doesn't look like the way that I thought it might in the past. And all this is kind of hard to say. I do think, like, making something like She-Ra and being like, wow, we're really doing this, look at us go. Like, and now to be like, well, we literally can't make a show like that at the moment, maybe. But also, no one here is giving up. No one here is done. Like, all we can do is what queer people have been doing for all of history. And every time it feels like we're getting pushed back, we find a way to use that to our advantage, find a way to just keep moving and subverting, creating things that are weird and new and different that speak to us, and letting the world catch up on their own time. So that's where I am right now. I have been tired for a long time, and I'm starting to get pretty spicy about it, which is a sign. I think that's a sign that, like, no one here is done. Whether you're a veteran or just starting out, we're in this together, and no one here is giving up.
Well, I love hearing that, and thank you for your words and answer on that. To get back to Scarlet Morning, so this is coming out in a week. I always like asking people this as we get close to the book birthday. Do you have any plans for that day? Are you going to scope out bookshops? Are you going to sail up in a pirate ship? What are you doing?
Yes, I'll be sailing down Sunset Boulevard in a pirate ship, plundering and burning. No, I'm going to be going on book tour, actually. It's my first time in a while, I think since 2015, going on book tour. So I'm excited. I'm scared. I hope I don't miss a single flight, because that's going to, And then I'm also like, I'm throwing a party just for friends at like a nautical themed bar near my house. And
that's the rat party. There you go.
Yeah. We're going to be partying like it's 1775. I'm really excited about it. It'll be good to just kind of like, again, I think it'll be a little a celebration to make it maybe hopefully finally sink in that this is a real book that's about to be out there in the world, because I still can't really get my head around it. It's been my dream for almost 20 years to see this book on the shelves next to my heroes and see it kind of go out there into the world as a real thing that people are going to read and respond to. And I'm excited and terrified and ready to accept my fate and walk the plank into whatever comes next.
A good plank, a positive plank.
Yes, a positive plank, hopefully.
Joy, the sea of joy.
Well, I love the book. It made me cheer, brought me joy, gave me chills throughout. Absolutely loved it. So congrats on the book. Thank you for taking the time to chat. And I'm looking forward to the next one as well as whatever else is next for you. Thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was so fun.
Thank you.
Great talking to you. See you soon.
All right, there we go. The book is once again called Scarlet Morning. That was N.D. Stevenson and is coming out September 23rd from Quilltree Books. It is great.
Worth reading all those pages without pictures.
He hates words. Pete hates words, and he was reading it.
That's right.
There are pictures as well. Like, if you were listening to the show instead of watching, there's pictures as well, so you could refresh the old eyeballs. Right, Pete?
It's a lot of words, though. It's a lot of words.
I don't think that's how eyes work, but I appreciate the...
yeah, Pete pictures are breaks for your eyes. It's a nice way to kind of relax. Yeah, I agree.
I don't think... You're still looking at them.
Yeah, but it's not as much work.
I think it's your brain that needs the break, Pete. I think it's your brain that needs the break.
Alex was trying to help me out, and I was like, no, I'm digging this hole deeper. I don't know what you're talking about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Well, let's dig a hole all the way to my favorite section, because you all make it up. It is your audience questions.
All right.
For audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments about absolutely anything, and we will get to it. But before we do, I do want to mention we've got a sponsor for this week's show, and I'm actually doing it on time this time.
Really great,
myself a little pat on the back there. Collection drawers... collectiondrawer.com. You can check out their drawer box storage system. They just celebrated the 20th anniversary. It's made in three sizes. They got the long box, the short comic box. They got a combination magazine slabbed comic box. Ooh, are you showing it off behind you, Pete?
He's Vanna Whiting this shit.
Wow. No, I love this. It is an actual drawer. Action.
Come on.
If you got your comic boxes, normally you got the lid on top. You got to take it off. It's hard to put on a shelf. These are perfect for a shelf, but if you don't have shelves, you can actually lock them together with their lock box technology and create the shelves that are perfectly safe. They're not going to fall over. They're not going to collapse, anything
Six
like
high.
That.
Six high.
So it's like your comic boxes, but it's an upgrade. Right, guys?
Yeah, it certainly is.
And you there can stack you them six high, which is great. Yeah, I love these things.
Yeah, they are legitimately great. Definitely pick them up from collectiondrawer.com.
Also, the dividers really help because you can you don't have to fill it all up. Like, it can be half full, be quarter full. The dividers really make a big difference.
I look at it as half empty or three quarters empty, but whatever you want to look at it as, Pete.
That's the glass
don't,
is three
don't flex
empty
on me, Cornell, all right?
That's not a flex. He's a pessimist. Not a flex. He's a deep pessimist, is what he said.
That's the opposite of a flex. That's anti-flexing. I do want to mention before we talk about what we're drinking, we do have a drink from Brett Macris, Three yes. Bullet.
Three Bullets.
Works at Shift down at New Orleans. You should definitely check it out the next time you're there.
Down he at came New up Orleans.
With down at New Orleans. That's not it. I'm nope. going to hold on one second. Here we go. Okay, hey, there it is. I would like to take the secret quiz, the drink, which is a little vodka, of course, Pete. You got some right ginger here. Liqueur. Oh, you got the vodka? You got the rest of these ingredients, too?
Well, I don't have the fancy shit, but I made mine with
so
vodka.
So just vodka and old ice?
No, it's vodka, club soda, and ginger ale.
Oh, okay. That's pretty good. That's vodka, ginger liqueur, lime juice, simple syrup, orange bitters, club soda, and candied orange. And of course, it is, you have to let it age for 5 years before you tell anybody about it. Right, Pete?
Yes.
That's right.
There we go. All right. So, Pete, we know what you're drinking.
How Justin, is it, Pete?
You it's like delicious. It? I mean, once you say vodka, I'm in. You know what I mean?
Yes, that's true. That gets you into so many bad situations.
Yeah. It barely, it doesn't go downhill from there.
Yeah, it got into a lot of unmarked vans that way, Pete LePage. I'm drinking, like Alex, a little bit of water because I have some work to do tonight.
Oh,
after we
man.
Finish this
you guys
show.
Are getting old.
Yeah. No, trying to get busy.
Getting smarter.
I mean that
you're evolving.
Yeah,
I'm still fighting it.
All right, we got a couple of questions coming in here. This is from Scheuchler. If you resurrected something you made as a kid or teen to make a new, what would it be?
Oh, that's
let
easy.
My childhood dog.
Ah,
resurrect.
You should. I got a great book for you called Pet Cemetery. You got to read. I don't want to spoil.
Oh,
it,
is it good? It's like an instruction book.
Good.
On
you
how
should,
and
no,
why
you
to
should
do
read
that
it first. You should read it and see what happens.
I'm going to do it and then read the book.
Okay. I mean, whatever you want.
Yeah. Mine, when I was a kid, I used to make a comic strip called Pee-wee. It was the adventures of a really short flying kid. And that's what I would resurrect.
Short flying kid. And did he have like regular like high school, like school adventures or was he?
It was mainly fighting tall people, you know.
Because they an were angry bend here.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like a whimsical Punisher.
Yeah, you would just kind of fly up and punch tall people in the face, like a My Cousin Vinny punch, you know what I mean?
Really, it's funny, a lot of times like we hear about a project and we think of the metaphor that's being on display, and it's sometimes complicated and like, you know, hard to find. In this case, it is not.
First thing I thought of was when I think I was like 13 or 14, I created a script for a more faithful movie version of It, but I feel like the boat might have sailed on that one.
More faithful to the book?
Yeah, more faithful to the book than the Tim Curry miniseries version, which is still pretty good, but
wow.
I spent a lot of time working on it.
I predicted the reboot craze of the future. Alex was already rebooting something.
What's fun is like as you kind of unravel your life a little bit, we get to hear nice little chunks about your life. I think to myself, at no point in time would we ever be friends. You know what I mean? It's a very interesting.
Except for now.
Well, that's the fun of it. You know what I mean? You know, it's interesting.
Okay.
He didn't say yes, but interesting take. I mean, I have so many comic book characters, pages of them that I'll occasionally find stuffed into the back of stuff. And so I would pull some of those little super.
What are on some of those pages, man? Come on.
There's a lot of drawings of these characters. There's
you never created your own? You were just always copy others? Is that what you're saying?
No, I created my own. No, I'm saying I created my own. I wasn't copying.
Oh.
The Diamondo, the Diamond Band.
Diamondo?
That's the first one I can think of, yeah.
Wow. That, he's, cool so name. He's made, yeah, great name.
He was Sort of, he had very much a Savage Dragon look to him, if I remember.
Oh, interesting. Cool. And would he just fight, like, jewelry heist crimes, or, like, what was his deal?
The threat to him was a crazed jeweler, so trying to just take a chunk, you know?
It's a threat to a lot of us.
Yeah.
Ken and Melissa LG says, hey, guys, big fan Ken here. Melissa. Big fan of you right back. Thank you. With Red Hood number one being pulled, do you think it will drive the cost of the issue for collectors in the future since the issues sent out were capped?
Sounds like it.
So there's a lot of backstory here that I'm not going to get into unless people do want us to discuss it further. But the short version, I would say, is immediately yes, for sure.
Yes, because right now is a great time.
Yes, if you go on eBay, you can sell it. I'm not looking at it right now, but I think I looked the other day and it was still at least $25 for a copy. And then for some of the rarer variants, like there was a Jim Lee variant that was going for $150 or something like that. So for sure. In the future, maybe, maybe not. Like, there's a lot of comic books that honestly are just not available anymore, but it doesn't mean that they're necessarily worth money. I think this one may have a certain fascination because of the story around it and how it was pulled. But I guess, I don't know. It's really, I find it really hard to predict that stuff in the long term.
Yeah, I think now is definitely the time. I'd be curious if it holds on. This strikes me as one of those stories that might just fade away. And because Red Hood is a character that's come before and will be back again in the future, because the issue is a very politics current, already fading thing. So I don't think it will be an enduring story, and the character will come back. So I would sell now if you have it.
Yeah, but it is an interesting the kind of thing that doesn't always happen. So that story could grow if it kind of, so I don't know. It definitely could be one of those things where down the road it'd be like,
here's what I would say. And this is, I'm not an investment expert by any means, but if you already have a copy, sure, get it graded and slabbed. If you want to sell it immediately to get a couple of bucks, for sure. But otherwise, again, if you already have it and you're going to hang on to it anyway, why not hang on to it in pristine copy? Worst case, 20, 30 years down the road, you have a very nicely preserved copy of it, and that's pretty much it. But we'll see. Stanley asking a question that feels like a trap a little bit. Did you like the Wednesday show? Do you like Tim Burton?
I feel like we talked about this before, because this is just a straight up fight between
Stanley.
The two.
Yes, I feel like I could be wrong, but I think Stanley commented on the last Week in Geek. Pete was talking about how much he loved Wednesday. Week in Geek is our Patreon podcast for our Patreon listeners. Patreon.com/comicbookclub. Check it out. Pete loves Wednesday. I do not like Wednesday. And if I remember correctly, Stanley commented on the episode being like, boy, sounds like Alex doesn't like Tim Burton. So I will clarify something here. The reason I don't like Wednesday is I am an enormous fan of Tim Burton and have been for years. There is none of Tim Burton's style on display in nearly any frame of Wednesday. I say nearly because there's a stop motion animated sequence in the first episode of season 2 that felt like the old Tim Burton come back, but he has not been the same director, not just on Wednesday, any project for years at this point.
Go fuck yourself, dude. The transformation scenes, it feels like Tim Burton. You can see it in the artistry of the characters.
It feels like Tim Burton. It feels like something aping Tim Burton. It feels like Red
I feel. I look at
Stanley,
it.
You
I'm
did
watching,
this to us.
I'm
you
watching Tim Burton, and I feel great right now because this is clearly Tim Burton's work in front of me.
Absolutely not. It feels like what everybody accused Barry Sonnenfeld of being a washed over Tim Burton, except it's the actual Tim Burton.
How dare you, sir?
Alex, you are pushing it in. You're trying to get him.
You are a horrible person.
Who knew that Wednesday would be the red meat that tore you to a fire?
Love Batman. Love Batman Returns. Love Edward Scissorhands. Love Beetlejuice. Love
Well, then where are you, bro? You're in the corner being angry.
He disappeared. He disappeared around Big Fish. He disappeared around Big Fish and never came back.
That's ridiculous.
Well, you know, you get older. It happens.
It's
ridiculous. You get rich.
We watch
Edward's wife, etc.
Wow.
What?
Alex going hard. We watched Edward Scissorhands with our kids, and they're like, we can't ever watch that movie again. That movie's too scary. He got drunk. And we were like, wow, what a weird part to be scared about.
That's the so many
that's thing. And that's why, and now you're drinking water, curious.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Oh, it seems like there's
unrelated events. Unrelated
events. Ah, it seems like maybe.
Honestly, I think it's, I mean, I've talked about, I have a fear of falling
down. I just
want
to say, not to push this too much, but I have seen you drunk with large scissors on this very show.
Yeah, wow. I mean, that is true. That and is I always true. Do it around the house. Ha ha, daddy scissor hands. Oh, daddy scissor hands ready to tuck you into bed. Oh, my God.
First off, I just want to say, Justin, good for you for adjusting, seeing the fact that your kids point out some flaws.
And that's
you,
not
and you adjusted.
That's not what that
I'm
is.
I'm proud of
this
you.
Was literally
that's impressive.
This is literally 3 months ago game. When they said that, and I was drinking up until literally right now when I'm having water.
This is the first day
but again,
I haven't
it's
drank.
Only because I have work to do later. But what I wanted to say, no, it's because of he wasn't in control of the scissors then, and that's what the scary part is. I think.
There we go. All right. Straight Bullet says, to piggyback on Schleichler's question, is there anything from your childhood that has made a resurgence that you were like, maybe we didn't need to do this? Almost all of it, I think.
Oh, you piece of shit. Dude, let's talk about She-Ra. She-Ra is a perfect example of something that was great in our childhood that they brought back. They did an amazing job with. So shut the fuck up.
But I think Nate,
maybe you should shut the fuck up.
I think Nate was 100% on the money and what we were talking about that I think like it working is the exception, not the rule that often it feels like, just leave it be. It's fine. It was good the way it was. I think a great example of this is Beetlejuice, which was a warmed over, absolutely awful, abysmal, pissing on the grave.
Stop.
Of Beetlejuice.
Stop.
Which he would love, mind you. He would have loved
Yeah, that. Exactly. That's the best Beetlejuice thing. Like,
come
Will
on,
there be a
piss
third?
On my grave. Like that.
Oh, perfect Keaton.
Wow.
I'm trying to think. I mean, we talk so much about the nostalgia factor, the nostalgia bath that Pizza was taking.
I love a nice bath.
So, you know, it's hard to talk about the negative. I feel like it's the translation into movies and TV where the mistakes happen, but... I can't think of anything about it that I'm not liking off the jump. I mean, I feel like there's a lot of people saying that about Alien Earth, but I'm not feeling that at all.
No, they're wrong. They're incorrect.
Yeah. You're a ridiculous person. Frederica
Rosa says, what did you guys think of the Emmys? The Bear is no longer a comedy?
I didn't think the Bear is a comedy. Yeah,
it just didn't win any awards.
Yeah. It just wasn't a great season. I stopped watching the Emmys after like an hour because I just could not take, what is it, Nate Bergazzi? Is that how
you don't like Nate? Well, Nate
Bergazzi, his Boys and Girls Club thing, the runner about, it was awful.
Oh, you hate raising money to help kids? That's what you're saying?
Did you watch the Emmys? Do you know what we're talking about, Pete?
Yes, I did.
It was a bit that I think they probably, it sounded fun when they were talking about it. Like that'd be a fun little pranky thing. They needed to not take it so seriously. When they started throwing the ticker on the corner while people were talking, I was like, guys, please.
Well, no. When it comes to, you know, that kind of money, you got to know how many seconds. So you, that
the,
way you
we,
know.
It was always going to be that they were going to pay
the kids. It was awful. Because, like, what is the point of an award show? It's to give out awards and then hear people accept the awards. The fact that those
No, the
people...
point of an award show is saying, like, hey, you know what? This isn't about us. We should try to help out kids. You know what I mean?
Sure. That's not... Then just, like, send an email with the winners and donate $350,000.
I agree. That's the best way to do it.
That's a great award show. I agree. What a fun time. Yeah, the TV.
Best dressed. You know,
it
that
was
whole thing.
Not only were they forcing people to rush through their acceptance speeches, but also they couldn't get out the bit properly. They kept stumbling over the bit and going back and talking about that at length. And every time I was like, stop talking about this bit that's not funny for 5 minutes. Cede that time to the people giving the speeches.
Or have some jokes. Have some other jokes.
Prepared. Literally any other
I joke. Will say, I thought the sketch at the top was pretty good. The Farnsworth TV thing. That was cool. I was like, oh, maybe we're going
to call back to SNL bit. Yeah.
SNL, very much. I feel like if we just see periodically a bunch of good sketches, but they didn't even gesture toward that. But aside from the complaints about that, and it was not, it was maybe one of the less good shows, I think, we've award shows we've seen in a while, especially with Conan having just hosted the Oscars and he crushed it. But as far as the winners, like, I thought it was really a great crop of winners. Adolescence crushed. I liked a lot of the acting awards. Severance got recognized there. The studio winning I thought was great for comedy in general, like a hard comedy is back. Winning those awards.
Well, on the winners, I'll throw out, and I did stay watching until this. I don't know if you guys knew him, but Jeff Hiller winning for Somebody Somewhere.
Jeff Boom Boom Hiller, yes, huge.
So
huge win.
My little story, I knew him beyond this, but first day, level 2 improv class at UCB. We had a couple of people who were coming over from our level 1 improv class, and we had a couple of new people. There were two guys in that class that were so naturally funny for the first day. I remember we went down for beers afterwards, and I can so distinctly remember the conversation being like, well, you guys are going to be famous. I guess we'll see what happens with the rest of us. And those two guys were Bobby Moynihan and Jeff Hiller.
Jeff Hiller, that's awesome.
Yeah. And so we went down to like be in classes for a while together, and we did like independent improv and whatever. But like Jeff, one of the nicest guys I've ever met in my life.
So
but
nice.
Also like one of the most naturally funny guys as well. So I couldn't be happier for him.
Great. Yeah, I knew him at UCB for years, and like great to have, especially that was like, that's not a hugely popular show, critically acclaimed, but like the fact that he won that category is amazing.
And so, great speech. Such a good
speech. Great speech. He had a great speech. The Pitt winning big definitely made me happy. I love that show.
Catherine LaNasa, you love her.
Catherine LaNasa, I love her.
From Katie Keene. That was the first winner from in Emmy's history for somebody from a Riverdale spinoff. So that's pretty exciting.
Come on.
Let's see it. We'll keep tracking that stat, see where we get with it.
Yeah.
Michael Tillman says, what's the coolest character you made, JT?
Well, I already said Daimondo.
Yeah, it's kind of downhill after that.
I had a group of
characters. What about Explodo?
No, you're just making stuff up, Pete. Oh, put some thought into it.
I thought I remembered some fanfic, but I apologize.
I wrote fanfic of my own creation?
That's right.
That nice. I'm such a fan.
I think that's just called fic, but all right.
Yeah, that's just regular fic. I had a group of characters that were these colonists that crash landed on a planet, and the planet changed them, sort of like a reverse Fantastic Four, but with like 12 people had like sort of a, it was when I was reading like Age of Apocalypse, so it was like very so that was one that I really liked. I'll to see if I can dig some up and embarrass myself on
reading
here in a couple. I never wrote anything down. These are all drawings.
One thing I would like you to answer, Justin, is me and the Zalbatron revealed our names for books, but you have not yet. So I was wondering.
Names for books?
Yeah, he calls them books. I call them real books. What do you call books?
Oh, this is a conversation that is coming out of absolutely nowhere. So before the show, we were talking about, I was asking Pete.
I'm just asking what he calls books. I don't know why you think of this whole story.
Yeah, but it's like, I don't know, I'd say 10 seconds of context. So I was explaining that I think of comic books first, of course. So when I'm talking about books, I call them bookie books. And this is 100% serious in my head. I'm like, comic books and bookie books to differentiate them. Pete, you call them?
Yeah, I say comic books and then real books.
Real books. And do you have a name as well, Justin?
I guess I say books.
Weird.
Not to be super normy about it.
Yeah, I guess you're just a normie norm.
That's pretty standard thing.
While I'm shooting from the hip here, I would like to bring up, we talked to the author of this book a while ago. And then
which book is it for our audio podcast listeners, Pete?
It is called Huxley by Ben Morrow. And we had him on, and then he sent us the book, and I just wanted to show it for the non-audio, for the visual a little bit, how nice it is. We talked about how great this
comic
is.
For the listeners, we are looking at purple pages, and now here are some more comic book pages, and Pete's going too quickly.
It's really just a well-put-together book, and I just wanted to show it off for the people watching on the video.
Yeah, hold on. Let me see if I can just read. Look at that.
Oh, where did you pull that from?
Right out of Pete.
Do you have an assistant?
Huh? I pulled it right out of Pete's hands.
Wow.
Really good book. Really purple pages and other color pages.
And there's some blue page. Oh, There we go.
A yellow
and
page.
This is called like a smashy smashy hard book is what
I knew there was
Rodrigo
something.
Rosa says, have you guys ever bought a comic at an auction?
Ooh. I've never bought anything at an auction.
I've never been to an auction.
Dream.
They have these comic page auctions and like expensive comic book auctions all the time. We should go to one. We should
How do you find out about these secret auction stuff?
They're not secret. They're on like there's like Heritage Auctions is one of the main places that does them, and they do comic book art all the time. Yeah, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday's comic book select auction. They've got. Oh, I can't click in, but it looks like maybe they have like the first issue of Wolverine and some other stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go. Heritage Auctions, check it out.
I feel like I would have a hard time because once someone outbid me, I'd get really angry and then try to fight them. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, like an Uncut Gems. Did Alex get new Funkos by the box of cereal? I did not. Those are two SpongeBob SquarePants Funkos. And there's two Barbie Funkos, and there's a Pokemon Funko in there.
Are you a Barbie girl?
Nope. Those were all.
He is in a Barbie world, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Amber Love says, would you rather have the Batmobile for a week where you have to pay for the gas and upkeep, or have telepathy you can't control for a year?
Ooh.
Wow. I love this question. It's pretty.
The can't control would get really annoying. That would be tough. Like, you couldn't make any progress for a whole year on it. That would be tough.
Well, but I mean, it'd be cool to just, you know, have it flying around.
I'm going Batmobile.
Makes sense. It's a car.
It's the lack of control that gets me, you know?
Yeah, but having a Batmobile is just almost like having a regular car.
Right, exactly. Well, that's what I'm saying.
But like, it's
I don't
Batmobile.
Want a regular car, but I'd rather have that than like nonstop uncontrollable telepathy that I'm just constantly hearing people's thoughts. I can't turn it off. I'd probably go insane.
Yeah.
I'm going to go telepathy.
Wow. Well, it was nice knowing you, buddy.
I just want to roll the dice. I bet I'd hear some stuff. Plus, I could get into music, play music, so distract
Wait,
from
get
your
into
dumb
music?
Thought. Like, I would listen to music to distract from your dumb thoughts.
Oh, okay. Oh, right. Like, you listen
Plus,
to
honestly,
other people listening to
On
music.
This show, I feel like we say almost all of our thoughts, so I could really
Yeah, I was
going to
say.
I could really chill during this hour.
I would be your best friend. You'd be like, man, it's just so quiet when I hang out with
exactly.
you.
Exactly. It's just like being in a cave.
Yep.
David Quigley says, it's anniversary of Time Cop, since it's based on a comic. I hear, how does the film compare to the comic if you read? I absolutely have seen the movie Time Cop. I absolutely have not read the comic book.
Yeah, and whose comic is that? I haven't even heard whose comic that is.
It's David's.
Hmm. How are you guys celebrating the anniversary of Time Cop?
I'm doing splits on the counter, personally.
Oh, good for you. Good for you.
Have you done one yet, or you're waiting? I don't
know.
No,
I'm going to wait until like the actual, like the time of the anniversary. When the clock strikes midnight on Time
Cop. And then you're just going to jump up in between two counters and Whoop. Split yeah. it fully in half.
Oh, wow.
Yep. I should watch that movie again. That's a good movie.
I think that scene is the major. I mean, David, prove us wrong. Is that movie worth
however good that movie is, I think like the concept of, you can't touch yourself if you time travel or you turn into a blob, that has definitely stuck around. I think about
That's
that and
good.
Talk about that all the
Canonical.
Time.
You think about touching yourself a lot?
Yep.
When I think about you, is what he said.
Yeah. Anyway, that's it for your audience questions. We're going to move on with our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
That's right. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online, as they've been nice enough to give us gift cards that we give to you lovely people. So all we need is a first hand up. Or...
No, they don't do that anymore. We buy them, but...
Okay, well, we
just
buy them.
Still great. Yeah. Still great to have.
You get $25 free dollars, though. I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah,
you know,
that's the
you
main takeaway.
Yeah,
that's the main. You get comics. We don't need to give you this behind the scenes backstage stuff.
You get comic books. You get $25 worth of comics.
Easy Reader. Easy Reader is going to do it.
Yay. Glad to hear it.
Easy Reader.
Okay, here we go. Today's trivia is about the comic Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and a small nod to the legend Robert Redford. R.I.P. to Roy Hobbs and the Sundance Kid. And so many great
today.
Is this because of his best known role, Captain America, the Winter Soldier?
And a true legend. If you could save your bits while I'm trying to do something nice for somebody, that would be great.
Who, Robert Redford?
Yes. Nice. Please listen to all three options before making your selection.
I don't know. I'm always just like jumping straight out there like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Yeah, it's a that movie was I love that movie. That was a really important movie for me growing up.
Are you going to keep naming movies, Alex, in hopes of getting the right one?
That was me doing the nod that he does at the beam.
Okay, great. Nice. Well, that was a little exaggerated. This nod is more just like one kind of, you know. Anyways, all right, please
chin forward, Alex.
Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles makes fun of Marvel ninjas, the Hand. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles calls their ninjas blank. Is it A, the Foot? B, it's like you combine the two authors in one name. C, Peter Eastman.
Mm. Interesting.
I can't believe this is happening, Pete. Robert Redford is back alive again. I don't know what we're going to do now. He somehow, because it's too soon. He's not fully, you know, he's dead, but we don't know. Can we keep going with the quiz?
Oh, he's going with A. Yeah. He's going with A, but I think we can all agree that Robert Redford has always been one of the best sneakers.
Yeah. Oh, nice. It's a great movie. Yeah. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
It's a great Gatsby movie.
Made in it. That's also, another great one before Leo's time. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, question number two. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles made fun of Daredevil's mentor named Stick. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles mentor's name is blank. Is it A, Splinter?
Oh,
B, thanks a lot, Jessica. Why do we invite her? See Jessica Raines.
Mm. Splinter and Stick, similar. I'm just getting word that he has passed again the second time.
Does that mean so he went back to, so we can
do
keep
we
it.
Have to choose a movie he made between the time he came back to life and died?
No, we don't. Yeah, A
did
is
anything
correct.
Come out of Africa?
Yeah, a lot. How dare you, Alex? Oh man, so what kind of thing is that?
Sorry, that
to
was
say?
Quite the indecent proposal.
Yeah, it was. Well done. Here we go. Last like question. This. Question number three.
I like this new idea.
In what year did Peter Laird sell the rights to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? Is it A, 2009, B, Way to Go Guy, or C, Guy Way?
My wife did a fun thing where she started making tea and just left the tea kettle on going.
Yeah, it seems like she really
literally,
respects the fact that you're doing your
right
show.
Here,
that's how you know she's been raptured in a movie or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. Exactly.
And Easy Reader says, A for all the president's men. Congratulations, Easy Reader. You have gotten a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics, which we pay for. They do not give to us anymore. I just want to be clear about that.
What the fuck, Alex?
As always, you're paying tribute to a Robert Redford movie.
Yes, I'm talking about the 1973 classic, The Sting.
Wow, I can't believe you pulled
that
one
off. Really nicely.
Worked out really well. Yeah. You got him. You stung him.
That's right.
But unfortunately, Robert Redford has come back to life a second. So I don't know. I think this whole quiz is, we have to remove it from the show.
Schuykler didn't even get on me on it. So, worked out.
Well,
good.
He doesn't take part in something that is bunk when the person's still alive.
You know what isn't bunk is that new comics are coming out tomorrow. What are you guys looking forward to in terms of what's hitting stores?
I'll tell you what I'm looking forward to. Casey Jones, number one, and Incredible Hulk, number 29.
Great. Justin, what about you?
Really great. I did want to say, this is a comic from last week, but I read Spectators.
Oh, you did?
That we haven't talked about in the stack. And, man, I really enjoyed it. It's very, you know, it's definitely
you
not.
You got to talk louder because I, the
can you
the
still
teapot
hear
is winning.
I need to go turn it off. It's been whistling for quite some time. Yeah. It's a great book about sex and violence and how that's what we are obsessed with in our culture. I mean, we can talk more about it maybe on another podcast or something, but I loved it. It's very graphic, sort of on both the sex and violence front. But it also has like the charm and conversation of a movie like Before Sunrise. So it's an excellent just synergy of things, and great to, the art's fantastic, and Brian K. Vaughan back in rare form. Really enjoyed it. But yeah. That was last. You read it as well, Alex, right?
Yes, I did read it as well. And I do want to throw out there, without getting too deeply into it, there is a whole thing about mass shootings that runs throughout the book. So just a trigger warning there. But it is crazy to me that that book came out on Wednesday, September 10th, the same day as the Charlie Kirk killing, because a lot of what that book is about is what leads to that sort of things. And the information that we have found out about that shooter is very much explained.
Insanely connected. Yes.
Yeah. So
what
if you're
leads
having trouble,
to it and what becomes of a world and a culture that where that has continued to fester. And sort of the two poles of sex and violence as the extremes in the world, and what happens if you remove those, how we can maybe be a better or at least a calmer, happier people. Yeah, with some of my takeaways, but really enjoyed it. Anyway, this week, though, looking forward to The Seasons number 8 by Rick Remender.
Oh, yeah, man.
And Paul, as I say, the art just continues to be draw me in deeper. I think the story is excellent.
Would you say it's worth it for the art alone?
I'd say it's worth it for the story and art alone. Ooh, okay. And the staples that bind it together. Like
the, worth it for the staples. You rarely hear that.
Like the podcast that binds the two of us together. And I'm also looking forward to, I'm going to fully go back to my earlier takes and say I'm looking forward to Absolute Flash number 7. This was what I thought was my least favorite of the Absolute books when it first came out, and now I look forward to it. It's very good. As the Flash is, the way they've positioned the Rogues is very different here. So, and Barry Allen and Wally West and everyone. So really cool. Enjoying it.
Two that I'll throw out that I'm surprised you guys haven't mentioned, or at least I'm surprised you didn't mention. The first one is we got Marvel DC Deadpool Batman #1, the first Marvel DC crossover to come in decades at this point. So that's pretty much a must read. And the other one that I'll throw out there is No Man's Land #1 from Image Comics. Oh. This is written and drawn by Simon Kadransky. And even I'm always very interested in what he's doing. I think he has a very interesting tone, a very interesting art style. And so I'm curious to check that book out. And folks, that is it for this week's show. We, of course, want to thank N.D. Stevenson for coming on to talk about Scarlet Morning. Cool. You can check that out September 23rd from Quill Tree Books, and it is great.
It's a book.
Next week on the show, we got Declan Shalvey is going to be here
to
talk about the Terminator Metal, along with all the other things that he's working on. And Mark Torres from It Came From the Radio is going to be here as well, so that should be fun. Comic Book Club News, our daily news show, Monday through Friday, every day of the week. Also, Sons of a Gun, our DC podcast. We're talking about Peacemaker on a weekly basis. And starting tomorrow, Let's Hear It for the Boys is back, talking about Gen V.
Cannot wait for Gen V.
Come on.
That's exciting. We'll be rolling out daily episodes for the first 3 days. Or if you're on patreon.com/comicbookclub, you're going to get all three episodes tomorrow as
drop.
A chunk early drop. As mentioned, patreon.com/comicbookclub. You can get ad-free versions of this podcast and all the ones we do. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Good night, folks.
Stanley. The Trump Band. Seekers, viral comics.
Provocative anger.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.